Welcome to PJEFC's Pulpit Ministry, a ministry that is committed to the preaching of the Word to transform life.
So there has been quite a lot of talk recently about saving the environment and Christians talking about creation care. What is the role of Christians in relation to environment? You know, sometimes we wonder, shouldn't we concentrate our limited time, resources on evangelizing the good news for Christ rather than a secondary issue like preserving the environment? But I certainly hope that we will all see that creation care in a new light this morning. Today's reading is taken from Genesis chapter 1, the whole of chapter 1 and chapter 2, verses 1 to 3. I will not be putting it on top, so you could just look at your in your own Bible. And I would like to invite Tam Yi An to come and read today's passage.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetations, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its own kind on the earth." And it was so. The earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its own kind. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light unto the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens." So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves with which the waters swarm, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heaven and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. This is the word of the Lord.
So why creation care is important? As you heard this morning from the reading of the passage, the creation story. You know, after making the earth, the seas, the sky, the heavenly bodies, the animals in the sea, and in the sky, the birds and the animals on the land, God is so pleased that he declares that it is good. And since God has created all that is around us in such an orderly fashion, it is expected that God will not left it alone to disorder. That's when God created an image of God, someone like God. We just now heard in chapter 1, verse 26, God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And that was on the sixth day. Everything else was good, but on the sixth day, after the arrival of man, the imager of God, it was very good. You see, humans are the last piece in the puzzle to complete the entire creation of God. Now God can sit back. Okay, so what do we learn from this passage? We learn three important things. Number one, God delights in his creation. If Genesis 1 were the only time the Bible gave such attention to creation, perhaps we could be excused for thinking it was merely a minor theme in the drama of Scripture. Yet God's concern for his creation is woven into the fabric of the entire biblical narrative, culminating with the renewal and restoration of all things, the new creation. Psalm 104 is perhaps the passage that sings the loudest its praise of God for its richness and diversity of this world. Now, I want to expand further on this psalm. The psalm begins and ends with a call to praise God, reminding us that the purpose of creation is to bring glory and praise to our Creator. God did not merely speak the world into existence, but he is also active in both creating and sustaining it. Verse 10, for example, of the Psalm 104. He makes spring pour water into the ravines. Verse 13, he waters the mountains. Verse 20, it brings darkness and at night. Verses 29 to 30, life and death in God's hands. Verse 32, he causes earthquakes and volcanoes. You see, the God of the Bible is not a God who makes the world and then leaves it on his own devices. This is a God who remains at work in the world. What is striking in Psalm 104 is not only we see God's concern and delight in our daily life, such as bringing forth food from the earth, wine that gladdens human hearts, oil not for cooking but to make faces shine, and bread to sustain their hearts. He is also equally concerned with both the fauna and flora of his creation. In the following verses in 16-17, the psalmist talks about the cedar of Lebanon, a prize-building material for king's palace and the temple. But here in Psalm 104, it is celebrated solely for the provision of nesting sites for birds. You know, it's just like asking me about durian. The first thing I'll think about will be, oh, durian, is it D24, Anghe, Chokkyok? Musang King. We think about that because we think about the durian as food for us. But that's not how the Lord looks at it. He looks at, oh, durian tree. It's about the nectar of his flowers for bees and bats. The fruit is also food for birds, squirrels, and if it falls on the ground, it belongs to the wild boars. Creatures such as wild goats, hyraxes, lions, that serve no purpose to the Israelites, and in fact can be downright dangerous, are singled out among creatures that God cares and provides for. In verse 21, God even portrayed for providing prey for the lions. And it's important to note that Psalm 104 describes and addresses a world after the fall of Adam and Eve. It shows us that the goodness of the world as described in Genesis 1 endures even in a world full of human sin. And God is very much involved in his creation today. Number two, we are a part of creation, not apart from it. You see, many of us have this idea that we are different and superior to all other creatures around us. Well, of course, it's not entirely wrong to think that we are indeed different in so many ways compared to all living things we have encountered. But I think we have taken that notion too far. We often use the word environment, right? And we talk about environmental issues, environmental pollution, environmental disaster, environmental this and that. And it seems we sometimes use it in such a way to imply that there is the environment and that there are us, humans. It's environment and us. It's two separate things. Well, I've got bad news. We are not out of this environment, but we are part of this environment. We, us humans, like all other creatures and living things, are earthly creatures formed from the dust of the earth. In fact, we share the same life-giving Spirit of God who keeps us all living things alive. And we read that again in Psalm 104, verses 29 to 30. It's the same breath of God that keeps all living things alive. Scripture regularly reminds us of our place in the wider community of creation and our relative insignificance. Example, Isaiah chapter 40. I just read verse 7 and 8. The grass withers, the flower fades when the breath of the Lord blows on it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of the Lord stand forever. Or James chapter 4, verse 14. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. We are so similar to many other creations, and that we know today, right? Through science and our better understanding. We share 96% of our DNA with chimpanzees. We share many physical aspects to other mammals. Plus, our lives are so dependent and entwined with the rest of creation that even our bodies would not function without the organisms that make their home in us, like the zillions of bacteria in our gut. Try messing with the gut, the bacteria in the gut, and see what happened to you. I can tell you it's not good. Therefore, if we think the world is going to be burned away, but not us, as we sometimes are led to believe, is incorrect. The old way of reading the Day of the Lord's passage in 2 Peter chapter 3 is not an accurate reading. Let me just highlight a little bit about 2 Peter 3, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and then the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done on it will be exposed. This is today's rendering of this passage by ESV. The word exposed here is literally found. But in previous, in older Bibles, sometimes you will see, it says, the earth and the works that are done on it will be burned. Okay? Now, I won't be covering the entire theological implications of this, but because Christians in the past have been given the idea that we should that the world will be burned. And it's going to be destroyed anyway. We should make the most of it. But of course, more newer translation like NIV onwards have all changed that. So let's have this in our mind. We and the rest of creation are one and the same. The third thing we learn from the passage in Genesis, we have a unique role in creation. Our job description is clearly stipulated in the next chapter of Genesis. So if I read Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. Now the Hebrew words, can I have the next slide, please? The Hebrew words for work and keep are quite commonly used. Is abad and shama. Both, and interestingly, these exact words are used numerous times in Numbers chapter 3, verse 7, 8, 26, 18, verse 7, and many other places. And the way it's used is actually to describe the role of Levitical priests to minister and keep guard of the tabernacle. Our human vocation is to work and take care of the place where God has planted us, to serve Him in our rule over creation as priests in His temple. Caring for the earth is not, in this light, a peripheral biblical theme. It is central to our identity as God's image bearers. In fact, some scholars have highlighted the similarities of the Garden of Eden with God's temple. While the Levitical priest was God's steward in the temple, Adam and Eve were God's original stewards in the first temple, the Garden of Eden. And we, who have now been made in the image of God, are the stewards of God's creation. That's our work. Now, unfortunately, in Genesis 3, when Adam and Eve sinned against God, the land was cursed and the stewards were banished. But there's hope. There's hope that the stewards are coming back. And we read that in Romans chapter 8, verses 19 to 22. Let me take Romans 8, 20, for example. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of Him who subjected it in hope. So God subjected the creation to futility, but in hope. Romans 8, 22. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. See, stewards play a very important role, and the decision made by stewards can have long-lasting and wide-ranging implications, both negatively and positively. Take, for example, if leaders of a country fail to govern wisely and justly, many citizens in the country will suffer. Citizens have, in some ways, very limited role to change the course of the country, except to change the government, if they can. Conversely, a wise and just leader or steward will bring much blessings to the country, and all the citizens get to partake and enjoy the goodness that results from good governance. And that's why, in Romans 8:19, it says this, "For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God." It waits for the eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. That the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. You see, can I have the next slide? The entire creation has been waiting for us to set itself free. They're waiting for all of us. They're waiting for the superheroes to come. And it's God's redeemed that have been entrusted to creation care. So when Paul described about what Jesus, in summary, summarized about what Jesus has done in Colossians chapter 1, I'll just read Colossians 1, verse 19 and 20. "For in Him all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through Him to reconcile to Himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. All things here refers to the entire creation. So how do we begin to fulfill our roles as stewards and redeem the fallen creation? I think first we must understand that the gospel is more than just salvation of men. We are very familiar with Paul's quote of Romans 1:16, right? For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. What we often overlook is the preceding verse, verse 15. So I am eager to preach the gospel to you also who are in Rome. The you in here is they are believers already. So if they are believers, what is the gospel that we need to preach then? Verse 17. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith. I want to repeat. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith. The gospel is essentially the revelation of God's righteousness through faith. When we look at the accounts of Jesus in the Gospels, for example, we also notice that when Jesus says he has come to proclaim good news to the poor, the good news is more than invitation to have one's sins forgiven. The good news is focused on the kingdom that is inaugurated in the first coming of Jesus. And of course, the kingdom Jesus proclaims includes all that God is doing to bring all of his creation under his benevolent reign. There's a lot that has been written about this. I think, you know, if you have time, you could look at a book by Dr. Moo, M-O-O, that's his name. The book is published by Zondervan. It's called Biblical Theology of Creation Care. So there's a lot more written about how the way Jesus proclaimed the good news really shows it's more than just salvation of forgiven of sins. And of course, this is nothing new now. Back in 2012, can I have the next slide? The Lausanne Convention actually wrote this. The next slide. This is not for you to read because you can actually Google and find this. You find Lausanne Convention. But it says this about creation care is indeed a gospel issue within the Lordship of Christ. But what's really interesting is towards the end, it says that. Therefore, our ministry of reconciliation is a matter of great joy and hope, and we will care for creation, even if it were not in crisis. Even if it were not in crisis. But sadly, creation is in crisis. The much-anticipated stewards have yet to make much impact. So today, I don't need to go into the details. We all know creation is in crisis. Temperature has increased by more than 1 degree in the last 100 years. We have lost so many animals. There's pollution everywhere. And some environmentalist historians have even gone to blame Christianity for the environmental issues we are facing. While mostly unfounded, right? The erroneous reading of 2 Peter 3, that the world will be burned instead of found, together with the idea that we have dominion over God's creation, and dominion means domination, certainly have derailed the full gospel of Christ to be preached. This is akin to our political state in Malaysia. Remember back in 2018, when there was a change in government, so many citizens were optimistic that better days are to come. We have great expectation of the new stewards of the country. Sadly, all the optimism was wiped away just a mere 22 months later. Creation has such high hopes that the new stewards will bring God's righteousness in the land. Instead, we have let creation down. So the Malay saying is, harapkan pagar, pagar makan padi, right? How can we care for creation in this age? it will be the same task as what was given to Adam and Eve, to work and keep it. We need to minister and watch over God's creation. Okay, next slide. We need to minister and watch over God's creation. Instead of minister and watching over our own needs, we need to move away from our preoccupation with just a single financial base bottom line. Instead, we should be looking at triple bottom line of planet, people, and profit. Profit, yes. Planet, no. People, no. It's not good. Profit, yes. People, yes. Planet, no. Still not good. It should be all three. Can I have the next slide? We also need to move away from our overconsumption behavior, which sometimes leads to hoarding of things, whether we need it or not. Instead, we should attempt to consume what we need. I use the word attempt, okay, because I know it's difficult. Let me tell you a tale of two men recently that happens recently. You know, an older man and a much younger man went for dinner. It's a buffet dinner. And like all buffet, we love our buffet. And when we go to buffet, we look at the price. And then when we eat, we make a mental calculation that we make sure that if we eat more than the value that we paid for, right? Thank you. I think when you all laugh, you feel what I'm saying. So towards the end of the dinner, I noticed the younger man, which I would expect have eaten more than the older man. That did not occur. The younger man seems to have eaten less. So when the question was posed to the younger man, are you full? Do you have enough? The younger man said, yes, I'm full, then this is good. I think the older man just thought that, oh, did he make full use of the money paid for the buffet, you know? There's certainly a lot more to be eaten. While the older man was stuffing himself full, you know, until he's really bloated and have difficulty to sleep at night. So this is a very common thing we see when we go for a buffet, right? We just because we have paid for it, we want to make the most of it. We want to just eat, even if we don't need it anymore. You know, we just keep on taking. Now, some of you saw me this morning and asked me, you know, that I'm very nicely dressed. Yes, because when your stomach is bloated, you have to put a coat over to kind of hide it. Now you know the reason. Above all, I think we need to move away from our apathy towards creation. Can I have the next slide? Instead, we need to inculcate in our mind a care for creation. We need to minister and watch over this God's creation. And this brings me to today's sermon title. If you're wondering, where is the turtle? Right? So, don't worry, it will not be another 20 minutes. Why save the turtle? Now, there are many animals that are facing extinction due to our self-serving nature. For example, overfishing of certain fishes like tuna due to increased global demands, illicit poaching of exotic animals for decoration and purported health benefits have led to the recent extinction of the northern white rhino. Our tigers in the jungle are at risk of extinction because we have taken their home to build our homes or to grow our food. And it can be difficult sometimes to save animals or plants that have competing interests with us. But the plight of the turtle highlights to us how much we have messed up the rest of creation. The turtle, in general, does not compete for food with us. It does not even compete for space with us. They eat the very thing that we don't want to eat at sea. We don't want to meet at sea, right? You jump into a sea, you see all the jellyfish around, the next thing you quickly jump out, right? We live on land, they in sea, and we look at this, turtle and us. We will imagine, oh, we could live happily together. It's a perfect match. But that's not the case. In our pursuit of life, these gentle creatures that are actually our friends have been greatly harmed. And one of the main culprits threatening the lives of turtles is our addiction to plastics, especially single-use plastics, which has led to turtles dying of indigestion of it, polluting the land and aquatic habitats. And now it has come full circle to impacting human lives in the form of microplastics. We can all start to put a little care for creation in our daily living. While I understand it's not possible to abandon use of plastics, it's still essential in many areas, whether in healthcare or certain areas of where hygiene are required. But we need to work. We need to use our collective skills, our collective ideas, abilities, resources. And maybe this morning I want to offer a few suggestions for us to start considering. Next slide. Let's start with trading convenience for care. Example, we could reduce consumption of single-use plastic packaging simply by reducing GrabFood. Now we are no longer in lockdown. Go out and buy using a reusable carrier if you do not wish to eat on location. Or in this case, you know, or do something different. Like, for example, we have Kopi Social, a PJAFC coffee club. A few coffee addicts in this group band together to buy coffee beans and resell coffee beans, but we require those who buy from us to use their own container. Just like Kopi Social is buying its coffee from the roaster in reusable containers. Is there more hassle? Of course, there's a lot more hassle. Every week, I have to drive to Taman Desa to buy coffee beans. But is it worth it? Of course. Because since we started early this year until now, we have at least reduced no less than 80 bags of coffee bags. No less than 80 bags. And there's just a small group of people deciding to, let's do something different. We love our coffee. We can't live without coffee. But doesn't mean that we can go on using single-use plastic and throwing away. The thought of having that bag of plastic, which for me just lasts about 1 week, and continue to exist in this environment, in this place in our life, you know, beyond my lifetime, beyond my children's lifetime, potentially also beyond their children's lifetime. And because the world plastics, we only are able to recycle 9 to 10% of total plastics. Can you imagine how much plastic is actually left piling somewhere? The second area, trade cash for care. Okay, the next slide. Use our resources, money. For example, to improve the environment. If you have got money sitting down and you're looking to buy a new car, but your house have not had a solar setup, maybe consider doing something like that. But I want to suggest to you something that is not all just requiring big money. Let me take one example, Milo. How many of you here drinks Milo? Quite a lot, okay. I make a lot of Milo, because my grandmother loves to drink Milo. So, and I make Milo, I love my Milo really gao, okay? So for a cup, and it's not full cup, right, about 220 ml cup, I put 40 grams of Milo inside, okay? So if you like to try that out, that is the formula, just try for yourself, if this is good enough for you. But I want to highlight Milo because not everything that's cheaper makes sense. Now, I checked on Shopee yesterday. One plastic bag of Milo, the biggest one, right? Because it's the cheapest and that's what we usually buy. 3.2 kilo is 49 ringgit, 50 cents. So if I'm going to take a calculator now and divide 49.50 divided by 3,200 grams, that will give me, and times 40 grams, that will give me 60 cents per cup. That is the cost of that one cup of Milo. But now we can still get the tin of Milo, which comes in a 1.5 kilogram tin, right? Which is fully recyclable. And it is 30 ringgit and 50 cents on Shopee. So 30 ringgit and 50 cents divided by 1,500 times 40? 80 cents. 80 cents. Fellow stewards of creation here. For 20 cents difference, will you use something to, you know, something that can recycle, recyclable, or will you use something that will continue to pollute the environment? So I hope after today, we'll see sales of Milo tin goes up. As we invite the SN team back to lead us in the to sing the last song, I just want to recap in this year's DMM month. We started by calling all to dare to walk on water, to take a risk. And we all need to do this, take a risk. We encourage all to fish for Jesus. Why? Because we need to get more stewards of God on board. We each one need to reach one. Last week, we challenged all to share a drink because God's stewards comes in all shapes and sizes. Today, I'm asking that we dare to save the turtles because God has tasked us to be stewards of His creation. Now, as we sing our closing song, God of the City, let us turn to our Lord to guide us to complete the gospel by revealing God's full righteousness in our city. Not just to man, but to man and creature. There are certainly greater things that are still to be done.
You have been listening to a sermon from PJEFC. We hope that you have been blessed by the message. For more sermons, please go to www.pjefc.org/sermons. Love God, love people, and make disciples.